prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we discuss underseen horror films, specifically those with fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Lance.
And I'm Erica.
And Erica, you just took a fun trip to the Pacific Northwest.
Yes, I did. I was in Seattle for a weekend, and I tacked on an extra day just so I could visit Scarecrow Video, since, you know, going through withdrawals here since we lost Vulcan and I Love Video.
Yeah, the pictures you took, I mean, just of Scarecrow just threw me back to missing Vulcan even more. So thank you.
Sorry.
No, I'm glad they're still out there, that the video store's like that.
Yeah, it's great. So actually, Laird, you know, hooked me up. He mentioned, he's like, yeah, go talk to Rich. He's the manager there. And so Rich, thank you, showed me around. And because they have all these sort of like weird idiosyncratic categories, like all like the horror movies are all in like one room, but they all have these different like subcategories kind of thing. And so just kind of getting a feel for everything. But so I went there and I was like, well, maybe I'll just, you know, find some movies and for the, you know, child deaths and then come back here and figure it out. But they have a rent by mail program.
That's awesome.
And so I was able to rent like five or six movies. Couple of them did have child deaths, so score.
Stuff you can't even find streaming, right?
Exactly. There was one movie, Killing Me Hardly. It's a Hong Kong Charlie's Angels ripoff. It was boring, but it had a child kill that I was looking for, and I was the first person to log it on Letterboxd.
Oh, wow.
Nobody has logged that one on Letterboxd, so that's me. Yeah, so I grabbed a few movies. I was there for like 4 hours browsing through, and I hadn't even like scratched the surface. Literally only left because I was starving, and I was like, I gotta go get something to eat.
Do they sell movies?
They do. Yeah, they have a section, and I didn't even get to that section though because I was too busy like looking for other stuff, and because I had a list of a few movies that I couldn't find anywhere else, and I was like, well, I'm gonna start looking for these, and then I'm gonna browse through. I spent a lot of time in like the Hong Kong section and the action section and the psychotronic room, still just barely scratch the surface. So
the mail-in rental program, mm-hmm. that they have, do they have like everything online? Can you do this online?
Yeah, I think you, because I mean, I rented them obviously like in person, right. And I mailed them back yesterday actually. And, but you can get anything mailed to, not everything, because they have some like rare stuff that they're like, yeah, we're not going to send this out. Makes sense. And VHS, they won't send out. But yeah, pretty much the majority of what they have there, you can rent by mail.
That's awesome.
You go on their website. There's instructions there how to sign up for it if you're into it. So I'm in it now. So
cool.
I will.
Are you going to try it from, you know, rent something from Austin and see if.
Yeah. I mean, when I come across something that I need, like I'm at the point, like I got the few that I was looking for that I couldn't find anywhere else. So yeah, I'm sure like I'll do that. It's not quite the same experience as like browsing through the shelves. So it kind of missing that, unfortunately, but you know, if there's like something I really want to see and Scarecrow is the only one that has it, then yeah, I'm going to do that.
That's awesome. That's an awesome program.
Yeah, for sure. When I was there, I also went to, they have a place called the Beacon Cinema, super tiny theater. There's like maybe 50, 60 seats in it. So Laird recommended that place as well. He's like, oh yeah, they've got, you know, Grand Illusion and Beacon and stuff like that. So I looked at Beacon and this podcast, The Suspense is Killing Us, was hosting a screening of Wild Things, which I haven't seen since it came out and I was in high school. So that was really fun to watch with the crowd. And then I saw, of course, Laird's doing it Weird Wednesday, like next month. I'm like, damn it, Laird. So that was a fun trip. And I love the Seattle weather. God damn, it's calling my name, especially coming back here and it's May and it's 100 fucking degrees. I'm like, God.
Yeah, this next week. Well, I guess these next couple of months are going to be fucking brutal.
Yeah.
But that's
awesome. It's going to be hell, Lance.
It's going to be hell. And There's a lot of high schools in Texas. So they are hell highs. Okay, I got to work on my segues.
Yeah,
right?
That's not a good one.
But yeah, we are heading back to school on this episode. You know that reference?
It's an Adam Sandler reference.
Yeah, you hate him so much.
I don't know why. Stop it.
Back to school. And we are covering Billy Madison.
Shut the fuck up.
No, we are covering Hell High, from released in 1989, a.k.a. Raging Fury, or a.k.a. What Do You Want to Do Tonight?
I like Raging Fury, but I don't think that, honestly, none of those titles is really appropriate for this movie, because not a lot takes place at the high school. There really isn't much raging fury going on here.
Maybe at the end, maybe
a little bit,
maybe on the teachers, from the teacher's perspective,
a little bit.
Yeah. I would say Hell High probably works the best, because these, the students, the teachers, they're all just
stupid
devils and demons, and they have no, they're just flawed human beings.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess that's everybody.
I'm perfect. I don't know what you're talking about.
Growing up, for most kids, is a lot of fun. They're always doing things they shouldn't. We all remember our own secret little fantasies about our favorite teacher.
Mr. Dickens, file those test papers!
These test papers, ma'am? Did you say file them?
File.
Yes, ma'am.
If you think these kids are a problem during the day, you should see them after school.
Hell High.
So what do you want to do tonight?
I've been thinking about it.
Some kids just don't know when they've gone too far.
Okay, so as of this recording, Hell High has 744 views on Letterboxd. It is streaming on YouTube. And as we talked about last episode, a few weeks ago, Arrow Video announced a Blu-ray release, which is coming out July 19th. It's a 2K restoration, has a fancy slipcover. It's packed full of special features, deleted scenes, tons of interviews, audio commentaries from the director, the cinematographer, and even Joe Bob Briggs has an audio commentary on it.
Yeah, there's one. Actually, I saw Hell High when I was at Scarecrow, and the DVD has the Joe Bob Briggs audio commentary.
Oh, wow. So it must be old.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll probably pick it up, because I do want to learn more about some of these casting. I'll get into a little bit of that.
All right.
So a summary of Hell High. I'm not gonna spoil the ending quite yet. Or should I? Should I just read it through?
Well, when we get to the
we'll talk about the ending.
Yeah,
because I have some problems with the ending. So, ignoring her mom's instructions, a little girl named Brooke heads out to the swamp with her doll. She sets up a tea party with other dolls in this abandoned shack, which she uses as a playhouse. And a young couple on a motorcycle ride up, and as they enter the shack, Brooke slips out and watches them from outside as this guy tears his girlfriend's shirt open, basically trying to rape her. And she tells him to stop, which he does. Pissed off, he grabs Brooke's dolly and snaps the head off. And as the couple jump back on their motorcycle, Brooke is shoveling a bit of this muddy swamp water into a bucket. And she throws it at the couple as they ride off, causing them to crash. And they're both impaled on this broken iron gate, killing them instantly. Brooke runs off, and cut to 18 years later, she's now a high school biology teacher, Miss Brooke Storm, and she's teaching the worst class of students ever. And they're led by this dickhead kid named Dickens. And there's a scene when Miss Storm tells Dickens to collect and file some tests. He throws the tests into the air, and she slaps him in front of the class. Dickens gets super pissed off, yells at her, yelling that this isn't over. And as the bell rings and the students leave, Miss Storm starts popping some pills to help with her very obvious on-edge nerves. Dickens starts making plans with his asshole friends Smiler and Queenie to get back at Miss Storm. and they recruit another student, John John, who has just quit the high school football team. And Dickens's plan includes heading to the swamp to gather some swamp muck to throw at Miss Storm's house. Smiler's nervous to go to the swamp because the murder of those two motorcycle kids 18 years ago has turned into this local legend at this point, so he's a little freaked out of the swamp. They all go to the swamp, then head to Miss Storm's house, each putting on these creepy Halloween masks, and they start throwing swamp mud on Miss Storm's windows and on her, which triggers the memory of her causing that motorcycle accident as a young girl. And then it starts getting a little crazy, and we'll talk about the ending, like what happens after that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the setup. Hell High is directed by Douglas Grossman. This is Grossman's only directing and producing credit, so I mean, I'd imagine the Arrow video release has, like, of his commentaries, pretty great and thorough, because I'm sure he's proud of his only film.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I appreciate that, like, 2 weeks in a row, we're very light on the homework. It's been nice.
Exactly.
Especially after coming off of Alpasari, I was just like, God damn, we're watching so much for this man.
Yeah, this isn't like a Ted V. Michaels catalog.
Oh, God, that, even that, too. Yeah, shit.
This one's easy. He did, there is one credit tied to his name. So he did co-wrote Hell High with Leo Evans, who doesn't have any other writing credits, but Grossman also wrote the horny sex comedy Up the Creek.
Yeah, you mentioned that last
from 1984.
did you watch it?
I did. So it's very forgettable. Yeah. I mean, it's the classic. It's a lot of the same actors who are in John Landis's Animal House.
Okay.
And very similar in that style of humor. And I've never personally been a fan of Animal House. I've never liked the movie. I never found it funny at all.
No. Okay.
So Up the Creek didn't do anything for me. It does have an amazing title song, though, from Cheap Trick.
Ooh.
So they spent some money there.
Okay.
But yeah, Up the Creek was directed by Robert Butler, who directed that kick-ass thriller Night of the Juggler.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Super sleazy New York, like with James Brolin. It's good.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much all Grossman's worked on. Hell High cinematographer is Steven Fierberg, and he has a lot of like cable series credits in cinematography, HBO's Entourage, which I hate it.
Thank you. God,
absolutely
fuck that show. Why does everyone love that show?
I don't know. I remember the first season, Sarah and I were kind of into it. We're like, okay, this is interesting. And then I realized we're just watching a bunch of fucking rich
assholes.
Kids,
yeah. Like, fuck these kids. Who cares? Yeah. God.
So he also did the movie. It was a cinematography for the movie, Steven Fierberg. He did Showtime's The Affair. If anybody watched that, I did. It's well done. Has so many twists and turns that it tries way too hard. But at the end, I just kind of gave up and didn't care.
Is that the one with McNutty in it?
Yeah.
Okay. I know what you're talking about, but I don't think I've ever had Showtime.
I got it for when Twin Peaks: The Return came back.
Ah, okay.
And it just kind of like, they kind of kept saying like, here, you know, keep trying it out, when I was going to cancel. So whatever. Mm. He also directed a few of those episodes. More recently, he's working on Emily in Paris and In Treatment. I've never watched those shows. But he did photograph some cool films. A Nightmare on Elm Street 4.
Yep.
The Dream Master. Secretary, James Spader, Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Great movie.
I haven't seen this, but it looked really interesting. Vortex from 1982, starring Lydia Lunch.
Yeah, I saw that on there, and I was going to watch that for this, but...
Yeah, I couldn't. I kind of did a quick search. Didn't really come across it, but it sounded interesting. That was like his first movie he worked on. Streetwalkin' from 1985.
Yeah, that one's, you know, that one, like, on paper, sounds like it's just exactly like the kind of shit that I want. 1980s New York sleaze.
The title alone sounds
cool. Oh, yeah,
cool.
Fuck yeah. And I watched it, and I was like, yeah, it's okay. I think Shout Factory has a release of it. I didn't pick it up. I think I watched it on probably Tubi or maybe even YouTube. I'm not remember where I watched it, but it's okay. A lot of people seem to really like it. I just was like, it just didn't feel, for an 80s New York sleaze movie, it didn't feel sleazy enough.
Yeah, needs more grime.
Weirdly. Yeah.
Makeup and effects. Credited to a William DiPaolo. He did prop work and public fabrication on stuff like Chud and Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Fun fact, Boo Boo, my dog, she doesn't know very many tricks. You know, she knows like, you know, sit, stay, treat. She knows, you know, go for a walk, go for a ride. She knows what those words mean.
Right.
When we're on a walk, if we walk by a sewer drain, if I say check for chuds, she'll go and like peek down into the drain.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I trained her to do that.
I want to name an animal Chud.
It's a good name for an animal.
Get a dog or a cat. Maybe just like a sugar glider or something.
There you go.
DiPaolo also did the special effects for my No Rules November pick, Madman.
Yeah.
So, and it looks like, looking at his latest credits, he's been he's a scenic artist for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert for the last 8 years. So nice, consistent paycheck there, it sounds like. Okay, so Hell High, the music. So the music in Hell High is very weird. It's all over the place. There's some original songs that just don't fit in at all, which, you know me, I love.
Yes.
Anything with original songs, anything with out of place music, anything with music. I mean, I'll watch.
There's sounds happening. I'm enthralled.
Yes. Yeah. And as soon as the opening credits start for Hell High, you know, it sets you up and it introduces you to this wonky, there's a Hell High theme.
Right.
It's like this piano, kind of haunting, but they'll do it in synth. They'll do it with just different instruments.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of just weird shit that, you know, it'll be like kind of haunting piano, and then it'll kick off into like this, like a labyrinth, like Quincy Jones sounding soundtrack, all
do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
I love it. But these two, so two guys worked on it. One is Chris Himes Hart, who only has one other credit. And it's a madhouse of a film. It's Stephen King's Maximum Overdrive.
Oh.
So.
Okay.
And Rich Makar he's credited as the composer. He wrote the original songs with a guy named Sean Thompson. There's about four or five original songs in here. Mm-hmm. To me, the songs sound like they might have been written for like Up the Creek, like a comedy movie or like a sex comedy or even like a romantic comedy.
Yeah, no, you say that. I agree.
they just don't fit at all. But Makar has a ton of credits and mostly TV series, Westworld, Hannibal, Schitt's Creek, Orange is the New Black. So he's still doing a lot of television and some film work. For the cast, so the lead asshole and scene stealer is Christopher Stryker. What a name.
That is a great name.
It sounds like a porn name. I love it. He plays Dickens. He's the kid who pretty much plans everything to harass Miss Storm. So Christopher Stryker had a small child role in the TV series Welcome Back, Cotter in the late 70s. And he had an uncredited role as a student in Eddie and the Cruisers in 1983.
I love that movie.
I've never seen Eddie and the Cruisers.
Really?
Yeah. If I did, I don't remember. I mean, I might have been a kid.
I mean, yeah, I think I probably surprise a lot of people when I'm like, Eddie and the Cruisers, Eddie for life. Eddie lives again. Because it's Michael Paré. And Michael Paré, like 1980s, is... Mm.
He's a good looking guy. Do you remember Christopher Stryker as a student in the movie?
I don't know. It's been a while. There's a Blu-ray with both of the movies on that I have, and I haven't watched it.
We got to try and pull a screenshot and just post it on all social media.
Okay.
That's your homework for this episode, since there's no movies to watch.
I know. I didn't have to watch anything, so yeah.
Christopher Stryker, though, sadly passed away in 1987. At the age of 27.
Wait, didn't this movie come out?
So Hell High was actually filmed in 1986.
Oh, okay.
And it wasn't released until 89. So he never got to see the release of his first feature star credit film, like, which is really sad. Yeah, I mean, I think he's great in this. I could have seen him, like, if, you know, when Hell High came out, obviously it's not well known. It has under 1,000 views. Right. That's what we cover. But, I could see Christopher Stryker popping up in other movies like this, just playing the asshole douchebag. I mean, he's great in this. So, and that's something I'm kind of looking forward to with the era video. Maybe they talk more about Christopher Stryker and stuff, because I thought he's really captivating in this. But we'll get to that. Okay, Maureen Mooney plays Miss Storm. She's the teacher who's harassed. She's also the little girl who created this swamp legend. Most of her credits are TV series or TV, you know, made for TV movies. Something I applaud is her work in classic soap operas.
God damn.
Yeah, she's in Guiding Light, Another World, All My Children. And she plays like in Hell High. I could see her being a soap actress because she's just on edge and just traumatized the entire time.
She's just jittery like the whole movie.
It's she's good. I could see her being this exact same character in All My Children.
I'll take your word for it.
IMDb has her credited as, quote, bicycle girl in Friedkin's The French Connection.
Really?
Yeah. So she must ride by on a bike. I don't know.
Okay.
But yeah, not many credits. I feel like her days as a soap actress paid off here because she plays traumatized very well in Hell High. Christopher Cousins plays John. He's the guy who quit the football team. He's kind of the voice of reason among the group of high school kids terrorizing Miss Storm. He, again, mostly has TV work, particularly in soap operas. A lot of heavy hitters on this guy's resume. Christopher Cousins, As the World Turns, Another World, General Hospital, One Life to Live. I mean, he's great. It looked like when I was looking at his IMDb credits and stuff and the timeline, it looks like he was filming Hell High while he was on Another World. Mm. So he does have some small roles in films. The Grudge 2, For the Love of the Game, that weird baseball movie directed by Sam Raimi.
Oh.
With Kevin Costner, John C. Reilly, Brian Cox is in.
Sam Raimi directed that?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I didn't even know odd. That.
That should be a weird Wednesday.
No.
okay. We pretty much have two more cast members. They're both in the gang. Jason Brill plays Smiler. He's the idiot of the bunch, kind of. Basically, he reminded me of Flounder Dorfman from, you know, going back to Animal House. Like, physically, he looks like him, too.
Yeah.
He was in one episode of As the World Turns.
Jesus.
And he doesn't really have any other credits. He does have a 2022 film credit as Mr. Gutman in the movie title Uncle Sleazo's Toxic and Terrifying TV Hour.
Super.
So, future episode, I feel.
Please stop.
And last we have Queenie. Who she's the last of the terrorizing gang, and she's played by Millie Prezioso, and her only film credit was a film called Jukebox from 1978, starring Casey Kasem, where I guess her role was a little girl because that was in 1978.
Right,
but
yeah,
no other credits.
Okay,
so that is the cast and crew.
We'll get more into this film right after this promo from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
So, yes. Lance, are you going to talk like Dickens this whole episode? Because I kind of feel like you should.
You want me to talk like Dickens?
Yeah. You get that like Kanicki accent going on?
There's nothing more. There's nothing after high school. There's only more stink. Fucking girls always trying to break my balls. Is that kind of like it?
It's not quite.
I'm a little more Brooklyn accent going on here.
A little bit, yeah.
Christopher Stryker. Dickens, to me, steals the show in this.
He sucks. Like you introduced it last week or last episode as, yeah. You know, we've got a group of assholes, one in particular. And yeah, he.
Like, bro behavior.
Yeah. Complete bro behavior. Just, yeah, he sucks. You know what though? They all suck.
They all, yeah.
Queenie sucks. Like when, you know, we're going to jump around here, but like
cool.
When they get to Miss Storm's house. And after, you know, they've thrown green slime on her house and on her, and she's like knocked out and with Quaaludes, and Dickens comes in and starts, you know, sexually assaulting her. Queenie comes in and is like, no, let me show you how it's done. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, no. And, you know, at first she's kind of like, you're kind of sticking up for Queenie. She's like, you and your fucking rape mentality.
Yeah.
But then it's like, let me show you how it's done.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she starts, you know, showing, you know, Dickens, like what women like, I guess. And he's like, you know, into it, like, touch her. Yeah, get into it. But they are all seriously flawed characters.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing is like, there's no one to root for in this. Like, I can't even...
I mean, Miss Storm, I guess, is the person to root for.
I can't even root for her. Now, but there's a lot of personal bias going on with that.
Okay, so you were... I just learned this. I did not know this. I saw you post this, that you were a high school teacher.
You didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
Oh, wow. I didn't... Okay.
So when I read that, I was like, who are you?
I know, because like I think what everyone knows about me is like, well, Erica hates kids. Wait, you were a teacher?
But you were a high school teacher.
High school teacher. Now, I taught 11th and 12th grade English, AP English.
Okay. So you didn't have high school assholes. Like, I mean, I'm sure every
fucking high school teenage, they're assholes. Like, they're self-entitled little shits.
Right.
But the thing is like... When this movie first starts, I mean, after the opening setup with the little girl, we're in a classroom with Miss Storm. Mm-hmm. She's got, what, 8 kids in that class?
It's small.
That's ridiculous.
I would imagine since it's hell high, 20 of the students are skipping that day.
No, because like they're like the seating arrangements, yeah. It's like there's not just a bunch of empty desks in there. And even at the end of the movie, when they're all sitting in actual desks, like they're all full and there's maybe 10 kids in that class. I'm like, that is ridiculous. At the smallest class I ever had like 30, 35 kids in it.
Right.
Yeah. Like we talked about how just sort of like jittery and on edge she is. You cannot be a high school teacher and be like that. There's no way. That, you know, and, you know, she's like, do this, look at me. And it's like, no, you can't beg and plead with them. They're fucking children. You have to tell them what to do.
Well, right away, she's like, Mr. Dickens, collect and file these papers. Let's see if you can at least do that. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, the teachers, like you get the coach and there's another teacher and there's a substitute at the end. They're equally as hateful as the kids.
Yeah.
But you're right. She is completely on edge. Slapping kids.
Yeah. I mean, I don't blame her for that, but like,
I wanted to ask you about that.
Obviously, you know, you can't do that. That's wrong.
This was before the days of cell phones and classes.
Right.
So, I mean, if I was a teacher with nobody filming it,
I was kind of like right on the edge of when the kids were allowed to have cell phones. So like some of them did, some of them didn't. I also taught in a really poor area too. So a lot of them didn't have cell phones, but like, I had a really hard time empathizing with her because she was just so weak. And I'm like, show no fucking fear, because the minute that you show any kind of vulnerability to a teenager, you will never hear the end of it. And so like her, I was like, you should not be a teacher. You should not, this is not your calling.
Her first problem is staying in the town. You know, where her, the murder she heard, and obviously it's this swamp legend, this local legend around town, because all the high school kids, she should have just moved away and maybe that would have helped. And but yeah, that makes sense. I mean, maybe she could teach like, you know, kindergarten or first grade or something, but in high school, you can't be doing, you're going to get run over.
Like, it's just, if you get, I think that was my big problem with the movie is like, I had nobody to latch onto. I didn't like anybody in this movie. All the kids are assholes, which true to life, kids are fucking assholes.
Yeah.
You know, who's worse though is parents. That was a big reason why I stopped teaching was it wasn't necessarily the kids who are still shitty.
Right.
But it was when the whole helicopter parent, like my child can do no wrong kind of thing trends. Yeah. So that like when I first started teaching, that wasn't really a problem. But by the end of my seventh, eighth year of teaching, it was like every parent was like, my child can do no wrong. They said they turned in their homework. And I'm like, but they didn't. And you and I are the adults here and need a united front. Like, if I tried to pull that shit with my mom, oh my fucking God, no. She would be like, believe in the teacher before me.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So once that happened, I was like, I'm out. I can't fucking teach anymore.
Yeah. And, you know, and not all parents are like this. So anybody who's listening, I'm not going to say you're like this, but I think that's just progressively gone worse and worse, you know, as time goes on. Like, everybody is very overprotective of their children, they can do no wrong. Parents now are more want to be best friends with their kids, which, you know, I get you want to have fun. But as nostalgia keeps becoming more and more like a prominent theme in everything in entertainment.
Yeah.
parents want to relive their childhood through their kids. And to me, that doesn't sound like a good idea.
No.
Like, you know, you kind of have to step back and, you know, realize, yeah, your childhood might have had fun elements, but at the same point, like, how would you have reacted if your parents, I don't know.
Yeah. There was just no boundaries. And it's like, there's a difference between like sharing common interests with them or sharing something with your child versus like understanding, you know, just, I'm like, I can't.
Yeah.
we need to stop because I'm just going to fucking go on a tirade.
Right. One thing I do like, you know, just ending on this point, one thing I do like about Hell High is the kids in this, I mean, all the characters, but particularly the high school kids, there's no repercussions for them. So they are just living wild. And I respect that. There's no parents involved in this movie when it comes to them. So they're driving on the field in the middle of a football game.
Yep.
And
nothing happens to them.
They're, you know, throwing out test players, pulling out switchblade swords in the fucking school grounds. And I love that about this because there are no repercussions. You just will get, you know, you'll, as they're driving around on the football field or yelling at teachers in the classroom, you're just going to get like an angry facial reaction from the teacher. And it's not realistic.
No.
But at the same time, I like it because it's not realistic. Yeah. It's just a fucking wild, wild west high school. It's Hell High.
Yeah. Weapons are like, you know, yeah, weapons are one thing. Like there's definitely, even where I taught, like there was repercussions if you had a weapon. Like with drugs though, like if I found them, I just kept them.
That's the way
and
to
I was
do
like,
it.
I'm turning these in to the principal. Stash it in my pocket.
You're all, I'm going to grade the potency of this drug. And that's what your grade's going to be. I did not get high. You get a fucking F. But yeah, that switchblade that I just need to point out that switchblade that Dickens pulls out.
Yeah.
So there's a scene where he walks up to like an injured football player who's like on a stretcher and he's like, the doctors are going to cut you open. Let me get them started. And he hits and he pulls out this switchblade. That's like a Rambo knife. It's like a butchy.
Fucking A.
A butcher knife. And it, like when that popped out, I just fucking lit up because it reminded me of the beginning scene in Pee-wee's Playhouse where he's buttering his bread or his toast. And he pulls out this massive like fucking bread knife. And I was like, this is amazing. That was one of my favorite scenes.
So easy to please.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I saw that, because that's fairly early, I realized, okay, I'm going to pick this
one. Oh, my God. Jesus.
But yeah, going back to the other, like the characters being flawed and just completely assholes. So there's a coach in here. Coach, what was his name? Coach Heaton.
Yeah.
Played by J.R. Horn, who I did check out his cast. He pops up in a lot of Coen Brothers films. He's in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, Burn After Reading, Hail Caesar.
Oh, okay.
And he definitely has a Coen Brothers like character look.
Yeah.
But he is fucking hilarious in this movie. He's super pissed off at John for quitting the team. You know, how can you show your face around here?
Yeah.
Very dazed and confused kind of coach.
Yeah.
And he blames the kid. So he's trying to hook up with Miss Storm.
Right.
They go to the football game and then that's where the kids drive, you know, Dickens and Smiler and everybody drive on the field. And basically, he feels completely humiliated, and he blames the kids and losing the game for the reason not being able to score with Miss Storm.
Yeah, she's like, she won't let him in. He's like, it's those damn kids because I lost the game. And I'm like, yeah, that's not why you're not getting laid, fella. Sorry.
Yeah, and then her friend so there's another teacher. I don't remember her name.
I don't either.
But she shows up right after the kids throw swamp muck all over Miss Storm.
Yeah.
And she sees that the windows are broken and everything. And basically she's just like, here, take this Quaalude. You know, it's no big deal. They don't hurt.
Yeah. Like
the kids take them.
Call the police. Jesus. Like your window is broken. Like
she's a terrible friend, but sweet at the same time. Cause she does give her a Quaalude.
I mean, I would appreciate that, but I would also be like, okay, I'm going to take this Quaalude. Can you call the police for me? Thanks.
But you're right. Miss Storm is just completely incapable of it. I mean, she's so traumatized at this whole event.
I mean, I know that she's broken, but it's been 18 years. Can you get over it? Like, I don't know.
I mean, I, personally, yeah, I could. I could. Yeah. I mean, I, like I said, I probably, if I, if it did trigger, you know, memories and I was worried about anything, like getting caught 18 years later, I would move away.
Right.
But, you know, as a kid, it's really not your fault. I mean, you threw the, you threw the swamp muck at this guy who destroyed your doll.
Yeah.
And
justifiable.
I mean, who the hell put that broken iron gate there? Like, why is that there? That's not your fault.
Exactly.
He shouldn't have tried. He shouldn't have been all angry for trying to, you know,
rape his girlfriend. Like, who cares if, like, I'm maybe, you know, girlfriend, collateral damage, sure. But
basically, like, she was a young vigilante. She was a young Batman taking care of, like, the bad.
Yeah.
The bad criminals. Trying to justify this little girl's murder. Anyways, he should have known how to control a motorcycle. If he get, what if he gets bird shit in his eye? It's the same situation.
Yeah.
Did you have like a local legend like around when you were a kid? I mean, everybody kind of has that. This is the road where two people died. And
we had, okay. So I grew up in the Antelope Valley, nicknamed the Methlope Valley. Cause it was like Breaking Bad where like there's fucking meth labs out in like, out in the middle of the desert everywhere. So this is near like north of Los Angeles, high desert area. And everything was really spread out and it was, on a grid. So everything going east, west was numbered streets. So it was like, you had Division Street. And then this way it's 10th Street West, 20th, 30th, et cetera. And then the other way it's 10th Street East.
Right.
20, et cetera. And then north, south was letters. So you had Avenue, you know, A, B, C, D. And then like in between that you had Avenue A2, A3 and that sort of, anyway. So it was really easy to find parties when you were a kid. There's that. Because there's, you know, party on K-12 and 45th. So there was, but like, because everything was really spread out, out in like Avenue J and like, you know, 50th West, like, or no, like close, like 90th West, when you get in like the high numbers, you're out in like the farm kind of desert, right, farm rural areas. And there's a bunch of abandoned houses out there. And we used to go, you know, party at the abandoned houses. And there was this one that always had all these like, you know, satanic symbols and all this shit all over it. And so of course there was rumors about like satanic rituals happening there. There was no like legend per se, but there was just like, oh, you know, and I think that's like every town has like that house. It's like, oh, the satanic rituals. And,
you know,
so that was a very long answer to your question. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, that's what...
We're learning a lot about Erica this episode.
Exactly. She was a teacher who partied at satanic houses.
I did. And took drugs from students. Thanks.
I mean, that's one thing that I do like about Hell High is it is just like a hangout movie. And it does get, you know, it does get slow. It has that amazing opening sequence, which is so great.
Yeah.
But then it kind of turns into, I'm not going to say it's like a coming of age, like, you know, it's these asshole kids just hanging out. They're plotting what to do with their teacher, but at the same time, they're still kind of talking about school and stuff, like maybe what they'll do after they graduate and stuff. But it takes a while. It has that great opening and it takes like another 30 minutes before there's any type of horror element that pops back up.
Yeah, it does definitely. It starts off on a really high note because I was, after that, I was like, okay, Lance, I'm on board. And then for like 30 minutes, I'm like, God damn it, man. And then the prank happens and I was like, okay, it's starting to pick up.
Yeah.
But once they decide, like Dickens comes up with the plan to frame the quarterback.
Terrible. Take that whole fucking idea out. Like they could have just covered it up at the home, just the four of them. Like why that whole section of them saying, we gotta cover this up. We gotta pin this on somebody.
Yeah.
So John leaves the scene. He leaves the Miss Storm's house while everybody stays around and he tries to get the quarterback's high school jacket, his football, his varsity jacket, whatever it is, and his Letterman jacket. And bring it back to the house so people think he killed him.
Right.
Or he killed Miss Storm.
Yeah.
Which is so stupid. I hated that. Like, that is the worst.
It is. Like, because John leaves with Dickens' car and the other three go back to the house where what they think is a dead body is, because she threw herself out a window after she almost got raped.
Right.
And so they go back and they're like, oh, well, let's just go back to the house. I'm like, why are you back there? And Dickens is taking a nap and fucking Smiler is like, oh my God, I didn't think about fingerprints. What did I touch? And then he goes around and starts touching more shit. I'm like, you're so fucking stupid. Your plan is stupid. You are stupid. I mean, oh my God.
Yeah. I hated. Yeah. I feel like the only thing, the only reason that they had that stupid, quarterback, pinning it on the quarterback scene is to have like maybe throw in a car chase and then like a car explosion.
Something.
Cause yeah, it makes no sense to me.
That sucks though. Cause like it's obvious that they did it for, well, we need something exciting to happen. So let's add this, you know, plot point to it. And it's like, God, this is just, you
it's
know.
Terrible. Yeah.
The rest of it after she quote unquote died, or they think that she's dead, was they keep going on with whatever. They go back to school. They think that she's dead. They've got a substitute teacher now. And then one by one, they're getting picked off at the school.
Yeah.
Slowly, you know, spread it out over like every 10 minutes or so. But instead, we have like this dumb plot or this dumb plan to frame the quarterback. And then she comes back to life and she kills Queenie, which it was a good kill. She bashes her face in with a rock.
I like most of the kills in this.
But it all happens so quickly. Like she kills Queenie and then there's a little bit of time and then she stabs Smiley in the ear with a pencil and then she stabs Dickens, but then ties him up and she's going to cut him up after she's like looking through the anatomy book.
And then, yeah, then he figures out because she starts talking about her dolly. And for some reason, he knows that he realizes she's the little girl who killed the two people 18 years ago when he wasn't even born. Like, how do you figure that out, Dickens? You're not as stupid as you come across. Like, yeah, it's a very rushed ending.
Yeah.
I do agree that. Like what you said too, if they go back to school or even if they just stayed at the house and do a cover up on their own and, you know, then she does come back to life or.
Right.
Like there's no reason to do that quarterback stuff. But I mean, I did have fun once she gets up, starts fucking with everybody. The pencil to Smiler, which is funny because in the beginning, he asks like, why a number two pencil during the quiz?
That's right.
And she's like, because the lead is harder.
Okay. I'll give credit to the movie for that. Bringing that back, you know, set up and pay off. Good for you, movie.
There you go.
Forgot about that.
Yeah. I feel like there's another foreshadowing with Smiler too. Like when he's on the roof, as soon as they get to Miss Storms and they're throwing swamp at her house and she runs in all freaked out and he's dancing and falls off and he lays there for a long time, like he's dead.
Right.
And then they're all, is he all right? Smiler, wake up. And he looks up and he's all, you know, laughing like an idiot. I feel like that might have been like a foreshadowing too, like of Mrs. Storm, of Miss Storm going through the window and laying there like she's dead when she's not. Mm. I'm reaching at
this
point.
You're reaching.
Yeah. I'm trying to find really, I mean, I do like this movie. I think the ending's terribly rushed, but I had fun with the kids because I think the actors are so good at being assholes that I do want to know what's going to happen to them. Are they going to pull this off? Are they going to get away with it? Are they all going to get killed? So I'm kind of invested until those last 15 minutes when you find out.
Yeah. Mine's less like wondering what's going to happen versus just like hoping because I don't like anybody. And so I will say that I did really appreciate the last death, which is when Dickens gets cut free by John John.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I got a killer. And so he like grabs a knife and like jumps over the couch and lunges at her. But she's got, I think, a scalpel or something.
Like a fireplace poker.
Fireplace. Yeah. She's still got something in her hand. So they simultaneously kill each other when he lands on top of her. Like he's got the knife ends up on her throat and she stabs him through. And so I was like, okay, good. Two for one. Cause I hated both of, like, I didn't like anybody in this. John John, I guess, is okay. Like he's not,
he throws the Letterman jacket on top of Dickens. So the plan in the end works.
It does. And I don't feel bad for, even though I don't feel sorry for the quarterback getting framed. Cause I fucking hate jocks because they're bullies and I don't care.
So yeah, that ending is funny. So everybody's dead except for John John. He goes back to school And he's in Miss Storm's class. There's now a substitute teacher, obviously. And he's looking out the window. He looks like he hasn't had sleep and, you know, probably all weekend. He looks really completely out of it, on edge, like Miss Storm was. Mm-hmm. And he looks out the window. Cops pulling up. He's freaked out. The cops come in. They arrest the quarterback.
Yep.
And I love when he's being dragged out. He's like, I'm on the football team. I'm the quarterback. What are you doing?
Oh, so sad, Mr. Jock.
Yeah, I mean.
I don't care.
In most movies, they would have been all, wait, what? You're Chad Smith? Oh, we got the wrong guy. But I did like how, okay, so, and then John smiles. He realizes he's getting away with it, kind of looking out the window. And then the substitute teacher is walking up saying, like, pay attention or whatever.
Yeah.
And he looks up and it's Miss, he sees Miss Storm.
Right.
So I kind of like that he's now suffering the same fate as Miss Storm, where she's just on edge, freaked out. You know, her whole 18 years, she essentially got away with murder as a little girl, which wasn't really her fault, but whatever. And John got away with it too. So that ending kind of works for me.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with a jock getting framed for it. But also, yeah, like now we've got this other person who is now the traumatized murderer.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's okay.
So would you like, do you like this enough to recommend to people?
Yeah. I mean, there's enough in it that I like. I probably wouldn't own it, but I do. I give it one watch.
That's all a film needs. That's all I'm asking everybody.
All right. Yeah. I know you do, though. I know there's a lot that you like, but I did. There's some stuff. There's enough in there for me to be like, yeah, 2.5. It's fine.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. I didn't rate it. I mean, I'd probably give it. Well, I would obviously give it a way too high of a rating on Letterboxd, but yeah, I would recommend it. I think maybe I will own it. I don't know. I do want to, I'm hoping the special features has some more information on Christopher Stryker. Cause as his single role in his young acting career that, you know, that's on a television series, I was completely sold. And I do want to hear, I wouldn't mind hearing Grossman's, the director's audio commentary just to, you know, just to learn more about the film, where it was, you know,
yeah. Well,
I mean, where the music came from, like there's a lot of questions I have.
Yeah. I mean, if you're buying it for the special features, like I can definitely understand that. And I think that's justifiable. Maybe wait for Ian to review it on Rock Shock Pop and then
definitely do that.
He can let you know if it's worth the special features are worth it.
Yes. That's a good idea. So double feature pick with El High.
Double feature. There's a lot of high school movies to pick from. So, but I didn't, I did go with one, but I went with a movie that was actually new to me. I was like, well, you know, I picked Slaughter High for, what was it? Patrick?
Patrick Still Lives.
Yeah. I picked
and
that.
Yeah. The masks too in this movie in Hell High really triggered Slaughter High.
Yeah. Looks like it a lot. I mean, there's so many, like I saw what you've been watching lately, so I'm not going to list them off in case I spoil your double feature pick. So I'll just jump right into mine. My theme is a lesson in pain. And so the movie that I picked for my double feature is called Lesson of the Evil from 2012, directed by Takashi Miike. So this is about a beloved high school teacher, Seiji Hasumi, who concocts this plan to deal with the rise of, you know, inappropriate student behavior, like bullying and, you know, teacher-student sexual relationships going on. And then it turns into this sort of all-out slaughter at the school. So like Hell High, the teacher, Hasumi, had a traumatic incident in his youth, though his is more because he was already mentally unstable. Like he already is like a psychopath when he's younger. I saw lots of comparisons to American Psycho on Letterboxd when people were reviewing this one. And Hasumi definitely has massive Patrick Bateman vibes. You know, he's got that underlying bloodlust behind that, you know, facade that he's putting out. And he even puts on like a clear rain slicker before he kills a bunch of students. Yeah. And so with the hood and everything. So it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I can see why people went directly to American Psycho with this. And because it's Japanese, a lot of people were making comparisons to Battle Royale, which is just an all-out slaughterhouse of students, which is, you know, it's very apt. But I think I think my review, I referenced the movie We Need to Talk About Kevin, because it's a little bit more close to that, where you have this young psychopath grows up and slaughters a bunch of students at a school. Spoiler for We Need to Talk About Kevin. Sorry, folks.
That's a heavy hitting movie.
Yeah. I've never, you know, felt closer to a mom in my life. I was like, I would be that mom. I would be looking at this child like, this thing is just fucking ruining my life.
That casting too, like Tilda Swinton and Ezra Miller, is that his name? Like, they look alike in that movie.
Yeah, they do. So this is, I don't know if this is ever going to get a proper release in the US, because, you know, the slaughter at the school is a school shooting, and it's just fucking ruthless.
Wow.
It's bloody as hell. So if you want to watch it, it's on archive.org with subs. It's just over 2 hours, but it doesn't feel like it. It does a really good job of it kind of like Hell High. It also has like an opening sort of kill, like a little bit of a cliffhanger, like, wait, what happened? But then it connects back later into the film. And then it spends its time building up and you getting to know some of the students and the teacher and all of that. I think it's really good.
Cool.
And then it's just fucking blood everywhere in this movie.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. Really good though. What about you?
So yeah, I did watch a bunch of, you know, like the classics, like Massacre at Central High, mm-hmm. Slaughter High, I even watched The Violent Years.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I thought of Horror High, which was one of my first Terror Tuesdays, like many years ago on 35 millimeter. But so when I was watching Hell High for the first time, I kept thinking of River's Edge, because of how like these kids seemed to have no sense of consequence. Like they felt invincible. They were just moving along, doing their own thing, doing whatever they please. Like they were untouchable, no matter their actions. And that's what I'm going with. I'm going with River's Edge. So you have Lane, played by Crispin Glover.
Okay.
Who's just,
so I, for whatever reason,
you think of like the river, rivers.
I was like River Wild. And then I was like, oh no, he means over the edge. And I was like, no, now I know. Okay. I'm okay. It's early. I'm okay.
Yeah. So there's Lane played by Crispin Glover, which is just an insane, a lot of people think it's just over the top, but it works so well.
Yeah.
He's casually helping out his buddy Toilet, and just going along with the fact that, Toilet murdered a high school classmate because she was giving him shit. And I got that from Dickens, and Smiler and Queenie and Hell High. They just all came across as feeling invincible and they're just going to ride along and do whatever. But then you have Dennis Hopper's character, Feck, who went through this traumatic event of murdering the woman that he loved. And he brings that up throughout the whole runtime of pretty much every scene is in. It's brought up in River's Edge. And then at the end, this memory is triggered and he kind of snaps and he does something violent because of it. So Miss Storm and Hell High gave me a little bit of Feck and River's Edge psychological traits. Like she just had this suppressed memory, this secret, that, you know, she was just going on and on about, and it triggered at the end and she just loses it. Feck is a little more subdued, but, yeah. It's kind of controlling their lives, this memory. And I kind of got that. So I wanted to rewatch it just to see if it actually fit. And I did. And I felt like this works. You know what? I'm going with River's Edge. Definitely a different tone. It's very dark. It's mm-hmm. emotionally draining compared to Hell High. It might work better with your double feature pick, just like a fucking hate life double feature. it also has a heavy focus on family dynamic and relationships, with which Hell High doesn't really have any of.
Right.
So yeah, I would say start the double feature with how you'd like to end the night, either like in a silly mood with Hell High. So you would want to end it with Hell High, or if you want to sit in a state and just like chat about things and life afterwards, end it with River's Edge, because it's a deep, if you haven't watched it, like you have to, it's on Prime. I might be on Tubi, but it's a movie that you just kind of reflect about, you know, like, what would I do in this situation? Like Hell High, it's like, whatever, these guys are dickheads. They're going to live in their fantasy world. But River's Edge, it's definitely like a demographic, like, you know, they're kind of these backwoods kids, just, you know, they can do whatever they want, but it's presented in a way more realistic manner. So
okay.
River's Edge with Hell High.
I like it.
What's your next pick, though?
Okay, so I know that, you know, the last few of your picks, you mentioned feeling a little self-conscious about them.
I do. I still feel self-conscious with my picks, but at the same time, I accept them.
Okay. Well, I want to make you feel better.
Oh,
you know, I do. Like, I'm going to go with a movie that is surely going to put off everyone.
Thank you, Erica. Thank you so much.
Except maybe like true trash horror enthusiasts.
Awesome.
And I know you've seen it before. And I'm not making any apologies for making you watch this one again.
Okay.
This is a no budget French slasher where nothing happens for 90 minutes except for a man going around the woods with an axe, killing people, chopping off limbs, and beating up cars. We are going to be covering Ogroff, aka yes. Mad Mutilator from 1983.
This is under the...
It's 8-9. Yeah, it's barely there. So I was like, I got to get this one in now.
This is like a devil's story. Like it's a level where I am so happy right now.
Oh, good.
Okay. That's
this
great.
Is going to put off a lot of people though. Cause devil's story, I feel like there's enough different things going on. It's like, well, now there's a horse and now there's a galleon and now there's a mummy and now there's this, like it keeps throwing new shit at you. Whereas Ogroff is just 90 minutes of.
Yes. Oh, people are going to hate it.
Oh, I mean, people are going to be fucking. Yeah.
But this is what we do. We get people to watch movies that should be watched.
Yes.
Love or hate them.
Yes.
And Ogroff is definitely a choice pick. I love it.
Yeah. I'm excited for this one. And on top of that, we are going to have another guest. We're going to have AGFA's head archivist and the man behind Bat City Cinema, Ivan. He's going to be joining us. The reason I asked him on is because he's taking his Satan Again in 16mm double feature on the road to select theaters across the country starting in June. So he'll be talking about that a bit. I got to see this double feature back in January at Spider House here in Austin. It was me, John, and like two other people. So oh, wow. What the fuck, people? Like,
yeah, he's bringing it to AFS too.
He is bringing it to AFS in Austin. That's the first one on the list of six theaters that it's going to. One of them is actually in Seattle, the Grand Illusion, not the one that I went to, but a different one.
Right.
So he'll be talking about that for a bit. And then we're going to start chanting, oh, Gruff, oh, Gruff, oh, Gruff. It's going to be like in Revenge of the Nerds where they're like, Ogre.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
I'm excited for that one, too. All right. If you're not already, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at Unsung Horrors, and you can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd at Hex Massacre.
You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd at El Shivey.
Thanks for going back to high school with us, folks, and we'll see you back next episode for Ogroff.
Yes. All. Bye.
Yeah. Hey, it's Death by Video.
I'm Phil.
I'm Kit.
And I'm Graham, saying welcome to our podcast full of merry movie mayhem.
Ever wonder what an Irish kung fu movie would look like?
It's called Fatal Deviation, and we covered it.
Ever wonder what a movie about a thousand cats would look like?
It's called Night of a Thousand Cats, and we covered it.
And it stars Hugo Stiglitz. Listen to Death by Video to hear us discuss and dissect some of the weirdest, wildest, and wackiest films ever made. All this and more on Death by Video!
Woo!